You know who else just does not give a fuck about subtlety?
Who?
Fucking Janet Jackson. Yeah. Have you ever just looked at the lyrics to fucking Anytime, Anyplace?
That's it.
Like, she's horny. She is
horny.
Capital H, horny. She said, in the thundering rain, you stare into my eyes. I can feel your hand moving up my thighs. Skirt around my waist, wall against my face. I don't want to stop just because people walking by are watching us. I don't give a damn what they think. I want you now. I don't want to stop just because you feel so good inside of my love. Nothing to the imagination. Nothing to the fucking imagination there.
Holy shit. No.
She just doesn't.
You know, when we started this bit, I figured it was like, you know, there'd be just a little bit of subtlety. There's no subtlety.
No, there's no subtlety. Public. That's, they're yeah, the song is like about, like, exhibitionism. She's like, fuck me anywhere. I don't care who's around. Anytime.
Oh, Janet.
Why are you Vince McMahon?
Oh, I don't know. Well, it was a little bit of Rocky Horror.
Yeah, true.
And also.
Oh, damn it, Janet.
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 Wow.
Hello, everyone.
Unreal, everybody.
Didn't see you there.
Oh, didn't see you beam in there.
Welcome to Player Advantage. I am Marcus. Doing? That is Monet. It's been a week or so. Why did we start this conversation talking about Janet Jackson and Janet Jackson being horny? Because we were talking about music before we started. Because this whole starting point. The first thing I heard Monet say when we sat down to record this tonight was "pussy control," which really just set the tone.
The entire tone of the entire recording. I said entire twice. Because I love pussy control. I love pussy control. And we started talking about subtlety in music.
Because the whole, I only listen to artists with a deep message.
Hold on.
Let's get the shit. Yeah, because we were talking about Kendrick. Because people felt very weird about, like, what the fuck is Kendrick doing? It's like he's hanging out with his baby cousin and doing bits.
Rover Gang.
I mean, after Dan said it, I just for like a week kept going, amazing, brother. About everything.
Pop off only on occasion, brother. Great. It's honestly great. Yeah. And when you think of, oh, top of the moment. Hold on. Let's get this shit. It's like,
I think that every time I like leave for the gym, I'm like, let's get this shit.
Every time I wake up,
first off, open your eyes, top of the morning. Al wakes up to you just going, top of the morning.
He's heard it so fucking much. We went to visit a friend, and what were we doing for the past 3 hours? Top of the morning.
He was like,
fuck, what's going on?
What are you doing?
Rover Gang.
But what have you been up to?
Just like rewatching Star Trek.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wanted to talk about that because you suggested an episode for me to watch, and I loved it.
You watched it?
Yes, I did. I watched it.
Holy fuck! I knew you would love it.
Yes, I did. That episode rules.
I suppose we'll start off things with that.
Yeah.
And I rewatched it. I've been rewatching Deep Space Nine. And I started from season two because season one is kind of just like the show trying to find its footing.
Yeah.
Which is fine. You know, all Star Trek shows kind of have to do that. They have that feeling out season where the direction is
kind of unclear. Like, hey, what are we doing with this?
Exactly. You have this Star Trek show that is just in a station, single place. They don't go anywhere outside of that station. How are you supposed to make a Star Trek story or properly set a Star Trek show in something like that. So the first season's just like some good stuff, but mostly garbage. And it's really bad. You have season two, which they're like, they're still on. I don't really know what they're doing, but they're starting to pick up things. And season three to seven are just like, okay, I know what you're trying to do now. But in the middle, I think this was, what was it? I think it was season four. This was the episode where Worf came onto the cast, and we have a lovely holodeck malfunction episode, which if you're familiar with Star Trek, that is a big plot. They've done it to death in TNG, Voyager, and Deep Space Nine. So this Deep Space Nine episode, the holodeck's malfunctioning. We're having a lot of problems.
This is Oh, you're talking about the...
Yeah, the episode you watched, or we watched.
Yeah, this is season 4, episode 9, Our Man Bashir.
Oh, fuck yes. And he is our guy.
That's my fucking guy right there.
I love Bashir. Like, that's another reason why I didn't watch much of season 1 again, because Bashir is absolutely not terrible.
There. Oh, he just stinks in that season.
He doesn't have a lot of character. Mm-hmm.
He's
not only just kind of there, but he's very full of himself, and mm-hmm. he doesn't really gel well with the rest of the cast. You have Dax, who's like, you know, the carrier of a symbiont that's been around for hundreds of years.
Cool.
So it rules. You have Sisko and her having this history because, you know, he knew her past host Curzon and they were buddies. You know, that's why Sisko calls her old man, because you know, they've known each other for so long. You have Kira.
God, Sisko fucking rules.
Sisko's amazing. The more I watch, the more I'm rewatching Deep Space Nine, the more I'm just like, oh my fucking god. Every time Avery Brooks gets on the screen, he just fucking steals it and runs with it.
Yeah.
He's that good.
Yeah.
But you have O'Brien, Bashir's buddy. Later on in the first season, he's just kind of like, he's the holdover from the Enterprise, because he used to work on the Enterprise with Picard and Riker and all that shit. But
Bashir, is Worf there in the first season?
Worf's not there in the first season. He shows up at the very beginning of the fourth season.
When
the Klingons hop onto the station, they're like, hey, we're going to try to fuck up the Dominion.
And true. It's
fucking chaos. And Sisko's like, we need someone who can handle this Klingon situation. And I don't think we have any... Oh, wait.
What about Worf?
What about Worf? The Enterprise D fucking blew up. It crashed into a planet. He doesn't have a fucking home anymore. Let's get him on Deep Space Nine. And of course, you know, he comes on. He's very apprehensive. He's in the same spot that Sisko was in the first episode of Deep Space Nine, where he's like, I just want to resign.
Right. I want to go home.
I want to go home. Yeah, he's like, I'm thinking, honestly, just going to Earth or doing some other shit.
Right.
And, you know, being around with my son, maybe. This, that, the third. But he decides to stay. So he's obviously in this episode. But Bashir is just, like, not there. He's a young, full of himself doctor who obviously doesn't have a lot of experience. So he could have picked any position in the entire world the galaxy to be part of. He's so great as a doctor at such a young age, but he's like, oh, you know, I want to, you know, practice frontier medicine, so I'm going to be on Deep Space Nine, which is, you know, the equivalent to, you know, just kind of picking an out of nowhere fucking town to like practice your medicine. But obviously it becomes more than that. But in this episode, Dr. Bashir is living out one of his little fantasies, being a super spy. Being a James Bond-esque secret agent.
Because he's just Bond. He's
literally just Bond. And we're going to get to how much it's like James Bond in a second. Because it gets to an obvious point where MGM stepped in and said a few things.
But we'll, did we'll, they... We'll,
Yeah, yeah. We'll get into it in a second. We'll get into it.
They get sued about it?
They got a very nasty letter, and there was going to be legal action.
Wow.
Just here right now. So at the end of the episode, when Julian Bashir is like, "Oh, I don't think this is the last we've seen of Julian Bashir." No, it's the last we've seen of Julian. Yeah. This won't happen again.
He specifically says Julian Bashir, a secret agent, will return, which is how, at the very least, like the Connery Bond movies all end with James Bond will return.
It's like you're gonna get a sequel. You don't get a sequel.
You do not get a sequel. I would love for a sequel to that. That should.
And that's what I'm saying. When I was first watching Deep Space Nine, we got to this episode, and you know it's obviously great, but I was like, okay, great. We're gonna see more of this because I love seeing Bashir, and also I also love seeing Bashir with Garak. You know, I think both of them are just like a match.
They play off each other really well.
They're so good. They're so good, but we have Bashir. He's living out his fantasy. He's just doing his thing. Garak shows up out of nowhere.
He just appears in the holosuite.
He has no sense of like
what the fuck is happening. He's like, you're just in here all the fucking time now. What are you doing?
Yeah, he's like, hey, what's going on? I'm very curious. You love to talk about yourself, but you aren't talking about this. And Bashir's clearly like,
hey, this is embarrassing. Get the fuck out.
Exactly. You know, this is illegal to come into a holodeck, right?
He's like, I should call Odo and have him pull you out of here.
Exactly.
I should have you arrested.
Literally, because in the Federation, if you just fucking walk into a holodeck, which I don't know how you can do that, first off.
Yeah, right.
Fucking security parameters, like, oh, sorry, someone's using this.
Occupado.
Exactly. That doesn't happen, but you know it's illegal in the Federation to be doing that. So, but he's still like, you know, I don't care.
I don't even fuck.
And I think it's one of the coolest things, Garak and Bashir, because obviously Garak is a spy,
right?
He's a former Cardassian spy. He was part of a secret spy organization called the Obsidian Order, and his job was very, very dirty.
Right.
He was committing assassinations. He was torturing people. He was doing the worst, most demonic shit. Yeah. Really, really awful things. Like the fact that Garak gets as much of a redemption as he does in Deep Space Nine.
Right, because, like, just watching this episode isolated, you wouldn't know that about that character.
Exactly. 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 Obviously, when we get to, like, In Purgatory Shadow, where Garak, you know, gets a distress call from his father and the Obsidian Order, and he goes there, and you know the Jem'Hadar, the Dominion capture him, and Worf, and all this stuff happens. You get to see there's episodes like that where you're able to see, or at least get a glimpse of how dangerous Garak can be. In the Pale Moonlight is another good example because he plays Sisko like a fiddle in that too. You get to see like how much of a real spy he is. But in this, it's like he has such a kind demeanor and such a like relaxed demeanor that you wouldn't know that he's actually like a fucking really dangerous guy, right? He's just like, oh, my dear doctor, I'm here to look at your face for 20 minutes. Bye. And that's it. That's all we get out of him. He's gay for Bashir. That's what I'm trying to get at.
Right.
But back to the episode. The conflict of it is that most of the senior crew, the senior staff, are in a runabout, and I don't know what it's like. I forget what happens. They get their they get transported, and through the transporter buffer, they end up getting pulled into the holodeck system or into the storage of the station, the data of the station.
Yeah, it's like they, it's like, okay, everyone's in the buffer, but we'll lose them. We've got to, like, we have to back this data up. We have to put them somewhere.
Exactly, because their data is so much, they're using so much data, they're using it across the entire fucking station. And that's the B plot for the episode. Eddington and Odo trying to figure out how to get them the fuck out. But in the meantime, they're actually replacing the characters in the holosuite.
And
so you have, oh my god.
What was...
I want to hear your...
Oh, well, right away, I popped when you're introduced to Bashir's assistant in the holodeck. What was her fucking name? This is the character's name.
Kira.
No, not Kira. Because Kira's there, but there's someone who is already there.
Oh, yes, her.
Yes.
Where she's...
Mona loves it.
Mona loves Tweet or something.
Mona loves it is her name. She's played by an actress named Marcy Brickhouse. Which, yeah, she is.
Exactly.
Which, that rules as, like, a name, because they're like, all right, what's the most, like, fucking Bond character name? Like, right up there, like, fucking Honey Rider and Pussy Galore.
And they definitely have their hand on the vein. Not the vein. The
yeah, they do.
Oh. Ooh. on the pulse of James Bond, because, like, this gets all of it right. You know, and that's why I recommended it to you. You're watching through a lot of these James Bond movies.
Yeah.
I'm just watching this, and I'm like, I fucking love this. You fucking love this.
Oh, my God.
So I want to hear your impressions of the characters or the actors who play, like, DS9 regulars as these other characters.
Yes. Okay, so kind of my thing right away, this is less about the acting and more about, like, just a kind of like a meta note. Because usually when things want to do a Bond parody, they just do Goldfinger. Like, they just straight up, it's every time it's Goldfinger. It'll be, you know, all right, Bond, here's, all right, agent, here's what's in your car. Here's, you know, and then you get the strap to the table, the laser and all that bullshit. This, it's interesting because it doesn't do Goldfinger. It does like Dr. No and From Russia with Love. Because, like, down to the fact that the character that is played by Avery Brooks in the holodeck is named Dr. Noah.
Yes, like Hippocrates Noah.
Hippocrates Noah, which is an incredible fucking name.
It's so good.
He, as always, is like the shining star of this bit because he's just fucking exceptional in this episode.
Oh yeah,
he is perfect in that role, and it's like, fuck, they should have some. They should have grabbed him to actually be a villain in a Bond movie. He would have been perfect for it. He would have been so good.
Wonderful.
Like, because that, when did that episode come out? Like 2001?
Oh, no, not even.
No?
Well, it was,
oh, it was like 99?
Mid-90s.
Okay. Yeah, so let's say it's like 98, 99. Pierce Brosnan is still fucking, is still Bond at this point.
Mm-hmm.
You could plug him in. For Tomorrow Never Dies or some shit. That would have been awesome. So he's great. I love Kira in that episode. She's great.
He's so good. I was surprised. It's so fucking funny.
Because she's just doing Tanya Romanova from Russia with Love.
Yes. You have Bashir, or not Bashir, O'Brien as Falcon.
Yes! One detail that I love is that his fucking eye patch has a falcon on it!
Yep. It fucking rolls. Which, it's funny, they in passing, mention, like, this holodeck program later on in the show.
They don't bring up
the name, but... Bashir's like, oh, I got a new program. It's gonna be great. We're gonna all play in it. You know, you get to play Odo. You get to play this retired agent who comes to help me. Dax, you're gonna play this character. And O'Brien's like, who am I gonna play? He goes, you're gonna play Falcon, of course. He goes, why do I always have to play fucking Falcon? Why can't I play someone else? They don't mention the name. They don't bring up anything up. But they bring up like that one thing. for people who wished that we had more of this. Just a little detail I thought I'd bring up.
Mm-hmm. That rules. I love hey, you're gonna be Falcon, of course. Fuck, why am I Falcon again? God damn it.
Can I be something else, please?
Can I not be fucking Falcon?
God, it's fucking hilarious.
And Dax as Dr. Honey Bear.
Dr. Honey Bear, yes. I was like trying to think of like her name.
Yeah, Dr. Honey Bear. In the tradition of characters like Honey Rider.
Yes.
Yeah, and she's fucking awesome in that role. And like she's a very pretty lady, but it's never like a thing in the episodes I've seen, it's never like something that is emphasized.
Yeah, they never really bring up like how
whoa, Dax, you're fucking gorgeous. Like Dax, nobody ever brings
mega
it up.
Mega hot.
She's
also badass at like Klingon weaponry.
Yeah, like that's kind of the thing that I know her for, is like being just like a fucking, just a total badass.
Exactly.
So
about Worf as Dushan.
Yes. Yeah, Worf's great there.
my man with the fucking cigar.
Mm. But the reason I brought up like, oh, she looks, she looks great, is that it is something that is referenced in the episode where it's how Bashir gets out of the trap.
Yep. And Garrick's like, are you now's not a time to be horny. We're about
to die. Now is not the time to be making out with Dax. What are you doing? But we're all going to die.
It shows how Garrick just doesn't get it.
Yeah.
Doesn't get the fantasy of it, you know?
He's never seen From Russia with Love.
No, he hasn't. He's like, we should probably snap her neck or something, right?
We should kill Dax, right? It's like, what the fuck?
Let's go. We all we need is a gun, and we got this. And you have like, you have Bashir going, oh, one last time.
You know, he's like,
I just want to see your pretty hair.
Yeah, cause he's like, you mind taking those glasses off of me? Because he's like, you know, he doesn't value you as a woman. He doesn't value your beauty. He only wants you for your mind, which. That's a lot.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy.
It's like a total inversion, you know, of like,
exactly.
He doesn't value your mind. He doesn't know how smart you are. It's like, oh, he knows exactly how smart you are, but he doesn't care that you're pretty. Like, I don't know. Tell anyone who dates people, hey, that person you're with only cares that you're really smart.
it's so stupid.
And the fuck?
And on top of that, he's like, we're gonna die here. I just want something pretty to look at before I die.
Yeah, he's like, can you let your hair down? You let your hair down for me, so I can think about how pretty you are before I die.
And of course, she's like, she pulls it down, she starts fucking waving it. And fucking
yes.
I'm like, this is wonderful. Absolutely great. This makes no sense.
It makes no fucking sense. It rules.
Not at all.
So they get out of the trap, and the whole time, fucking Garrick is like, we need to just tell them to kill the simulation, and so we can get the fuck out of here and not die.
Yep.
And then Bashir fucking shoots him.
He does, and that's one of my favorite parts of the episode, because Garrick for so long has kind of like,
he doesn't take him seriously.
He doesn't take him seriously, but he's also like been like, okay, there's potential for you if you ever wanted to get in this spy game. It's very tacit, but he's like, there's totally stuff you could do. You could totally do it. You just have to be fucking ruthless,
right?
And obviously, Bashir is based not on the holodeck totally. Program.
He's a doctor. Well, no, he's not.
He's a doctor, but he thinks about being a secret agent.
Right. He thinks about being James Bond.
Exactly. So like this is the one time where he acts like a real, quote unquote, real spy and just shoots
Garrick in like the back of the neck.
In the back of the neck, and Garrick's like, you could have killed me, right? And
he's like, who's to say I wasn't trying?
Exactly. He goes, oh, Oh, you're learning. Bashir's learning.
Look, everyone, my best friend just tried to murder me.
He's like, Doctor, there's hope for you yet. I always get a kick out of that.
Yeah, and then we just get like 5 minutes of Avery Brooks monologuing.
Yes, it's so fucking good. He's so good. He's going off. He's obviously hamming it up. I don't know who directed this episode, but whoever did, just fucking like
10 out of 10.
Wonderful. They got everyone like down perfect. And obviously the conflict of the episode, or I'm sorry, of the holosuite, is destroying the world.
He's trying to flood the world and start it over.
Yes, with one little island, so he can start everything over, start the human race over again. And he's like, oh yeah, sure, let's just fucking burn it down. Bashir's like, yeah, sure, we'll do that.
Hey, Bashir, you gotta just not let anybody die for the next 2 minutes. So he's like,
exactly.
Fuck. How do I do that?
You gotta make the crazy decision and
to destroy the world.
Just destroy the world and be like, yeah, you're right, Dr. Hippocrates, Noah. You know exactly what you're talking about.
And then after that, he still tries to shoot him.
Yep. It's fucking ridiculous. Episode ends with the hint that we will get more, but we never get more outside of that one scene I mentioned earlier in a later episode. I think it's when they have the gray uniforms, like the first contact uniforms. That's it. That's all we get. And it was because MGM were fucking awful.
MGM and were pissed.
They were absolutely pissed. They're like, you're literally ripping us off. Never do that again.
It's like, it's homage. Well, it's covered under parody law.
Exactly. But they didn't. They were like, oh, well, we're still going to see you. So you never get to see the secret agent, Dr. Bashir, again. But you get to still follow that plot thread through Section 31, the secret Starfleet division, like the secret Starfleet spy stuff, and their interest in Bashir, because that's a big thing. Like later on in the show, during the Dominion War arc, they reach out to Bashir. At first, Sloane, a representative, an agent of Section 31, tries to find out if Bashir's a spy for the Dominion, because he got captured by the Dominion, all this shit. And, you know, obviously he proves his innocence. He's like, I'm not a spy. I'm dedicated to the Federation. And Bashir has that, he has that kind of, the way Picard looks at the Federation, where we are striving to be better than we were before. We are the best we can be, and we always do right. You know, that's it. Bottom line, period. It's very, you know, black and white. And then Section 31 shows up, and he's kind of like, I don't know what the fuck's going on. But it's just nice that although we don't get, you know, more James Bond stuff, we do get some sort of like, okay, Dr. Bashir and spy thrillers. We get more of that. So it's very neat to kind of tie into what we're talking about. That was Artman Bashir, a great little DS9 episode. We'll probably do more of these. I want to send you more episodes.
Yeah, please of, like, just send
Space
me
Nine
episodes.
I don't know about Voyager, because I love Voyager, but I can't think of any. I can think of a few good episodes, but not off the top of my head. TNG too. I can think of a couple good ones, but. But yeah, we'll do this more. It'll be like a little Star Trek thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the first thing we're talking about tonight. Fucking rules.
Yeah.
What have you been up to lately?
As per usual, I've been playing video games, reading comic books. I've been trying to clear out my backlog on games. So I beat I did this before the last podcast, but I didn't say it because we talked so long about fucking wrestling. I beat Mass Effect, I beat the Legendary Edition, the whole trilogy.
Oh, nice, nice. Holy shit, all three games, right?
All three games. And the DLC for all those games, because it's just... I love the way they integrate the DLC, because it's just there. It's just just on the map. Go do this mission. So the thing for me about these games is I've beaten Mass Effect 2 what has to be like a half dozen times. It's one of my favorite games ever. And I've just never played within the context of all three. Like, I've never played all of them back to back. And I had never beaten the first one. Because by the time I played it, like, I watched my friend play it when it first came out, because he had it on the 360, and so I watched him get to a point up until the game glitched and didn't let him play it anymore. I'd never beat it, because then I played it when it came out, when they released the trilogy on the PS3. I tried playing the first game, and it's bad. Like, the story of the first Mass Effect is really good, but it plays poorly. Especially because at the time I was playing Infiltrator as the class. So yeah. I, like, hey, I want to use a sniper rifle. No, fuck you, go to hell, die, says the video game. And so this, you know, the Legendary Edition improves Mass Effect 1 so much. Like, above any of the games, Mass Effect 1 is just a huge fucking improvement.
I'm sure.
And so taking that character that I played in Mass Effect 1 and carrying it over to Mass Effect 2, easy. Because Mass Effect 2, it's set up in such a way where you see what's happening, and then the game goes out of its way to kind of catch you up. Mass Effect 3, if you have not played the last DLC for Mass Effect 2, is so fucking confusing. Like, the beginning of Mass Effect 3, I remember playing it and going, what the fuck did I miss? Because I played 2, I beat 2, and then I moved on to 3, and I didn't have the DLC, so I didn't know what the fuck they were talking about. Because Mass Effect 3 opens with Shepard, basically in Alliance jail. Like, you get fucking court-martialed after the end of 2, because you blow up a fucking galaxy.
Which, when I heard about that, because I haven't played the Mass Effect games, I've been meaning to, but...
You would like them, at least from the story point of view, because it's very Star Trek.
Mm-hmm. It's crazy, actually. Babylon 5 was a big inspiration of it, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they took a lot from Babylon 5, like the Citadel, I think, where the aliens meet up and... So, like, I really want to get into it at some point.
Mm-hmm.
I just, you know...
Haven't.
But that concept of, like, you getting court-martialed, your actions having consequences.
Yeah.
No, it's awesome. It's great.
Yeah, but it's something that, because it happens in a DLC, and a lot of people who didn't get the DLC for 2 just didn't fucking know about it. So it's like, what the fuck happened? What did you do when I wasn't controlling you for a while, Shepard? And playing that DLC, it's like, oh, got it. Because you have to blow up the mass relay. So the mass relays are how you do your jumping between systems and galaxies and all that shit.
I see.
So you use the power from the mass relay to get from place to place. You have to blow up a mass relay to prevent the Reapers, the sentient synthetic race, from coming through and killing everyone.
Holy shit.
Yeah, yeah. They look like giant bugs. You have to prevent them from coming through and killing everyone. So to buy time, you have to blow up the relay. The relay explodes and wipes out an entire system.
Holy fuck.
Yeah, and kills...
Yeah, that...
Kills a ton of one specific... Like, you basically commit genocide. It's fucked.
Holy shit.
It's, like, and the thing is, the like, you were already on the collision course and you're trying to warn them, you guys have to get out of here. Laura, if you play it the way I did, if you play Paragon and you're like, you guys have to get the fuck out, the message never gets to them. Like, not only does it not get to them in time, they just never hear it. They just never
get the message. Yeah. You actively tried to right. evacuate.
Yeah, you guys got to get out of here.
Didn't work out at all.
Yeah, it just didn't work. And so you start and you're in Alliance jail and it's fucked. So it's weird because Mass Effect is a game series where the quality of the writing goes down, but the quality of the game itself goes up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, 3 plays great. 3's story is nonsense.
And that's a shame because, like, the first 2 games' story, at least from an outsider's perspective,
mm-hmm.
it's so well received, right?
Like, yeah. Especially great. 1 and 2. Yeah. Mass Effect 3, just to talk about it very briefly, Mass Effect 3 introduces a character who's supposed to be like the anti-Shepard. Like, he's like just this fucking cool, like, he's basically Raiden from Metal Gear.
Oh my god, really? He's
like this fucking cyborg ninja, like, his name's Kai Lang, and he fucking sucks.
Oh my god.
Like, it's very clearly, like, they designed him to be really cool, but, like, you just beat his ass constantly. And
is there a scene where you fight him in, like, a nightclub?
Not in a nightclub. You fight him on the Citadel, and then you fight him, in a temple.
Okay, yeah, I know who this fucker is.
And so you in game beat him, and then he calls in a gunship that, like, destroys the temple, and he survives, and he's like leaves you for dead, and steals this important thing that you need. And then he sends you a message disguised as being from military command of one of the alien races. And I'm going to read it to you, and you can tell me what you think of this fucking guy. Good. You opened this message. This isn't actually military command. They're busy tending to what's left of their planet. So you survived our fight. You're not as weak as I thought. But never forget that your best wasn't good enough to stop me. Now an entire planet is dying because you lack the strength to win. The legend of Shepard needs to be rewritten. I hope I'm there for the last chapter. It ends with your death.
Okay.
This dude is so fucking, like, 2011 edgy boy.
It's really... That's really bad writing.
Yeah.
Holy fuck. Yeah. I mean, like... That's the thing, like... I feel like the situation, at least from my perspective, is sick. But if it was with a character who wasn't so edgy,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
Like, is it like a form of betrayal? Was he, like, on your team and then isn't on your team?
Wait, say that again?
Is it like a form of betrayal? Like, this guy, like,
no, betraying Shepard? No, he's just with the one of the antagonist groups.
I see. Yeah, that's awful.
He fights a character, depending on it. So your crew members from 2 can all die.
Yeah.
Like, they can all, like, that's the hook of 2, is that if you don't do everything that needs to be done, if you fuck up, your crew members can die.
And, which is great.
Yeah.
I love that.
Which is, it adds to the tension, because it's like, fuck, yep. I don't fuck this up. And so one of your party members from 2 is dying. Like, he tells you, it's the first thing you learn about him is that he's an assassin. 2, he is dying of of a terminal sickness.
Yes, yes. I think I know this character too.
That character fights Kai Lang and pretty much beats his ass.
That fucking rules.
like he's only gotten sicker by the time 3 starts, because 3 is 6 months after 2.
Yeah.
You got your ass kicked. You're the greatest assassin that this group has, and a dying assassin. Almost, like, he goes so blow for blow with you that you stabbed him, and then he still lived for a few hours after that.
Yep. Yep. Just like, okay.
Like, he's supposed to be really cool, and he just stinks. He's a loser.
Jesus.
I like that you can carry over certain relationships through every game. So, like, because this is, like, a big difference between Mass Effect and a game like Dragon Age. It's same studio. Dragon Age, you play as a different character in every game. Mass Effect, you play as the same character across 3 games. So everything that you do in one game carries over to the next one and affects you and how you play the game. Which is, you know, it's not a totally, like, no one's saying that this is a new thing. But yeah, it is really fun to see, especially when you can play them all back to back to back in the way that I did.
Yeah.
And so it's like, you get to see these characters grow in different ways and how your actions have affected their lives.
And that's... Exactly, and...
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry to interrupt you.
No, go ahead.
And I'm sure that not only their relationships, but themselves, or, you know, the characters themselves, they change drastically. The ones who do make it throughout all the games. You know, I'm sure, like, they're not the same person they were, you know.
Right. These characters aren't static. And it's not like, and you can see the growth. That's the important thing, is that you see the things happen kind of in real time versus like, oh, so now you're like this. And it's like, no, because of the thing you said 2 games ago, this person is like this now.
And that's more than the gameplay. More than all that stuff, it's the story that does definitely...
Right, and it plays into the role-playing of it all, which I think is cool, because, like...
Yeah.
So I played Shepard as being very, like, very upstanding, but as time goes on, gets more, like, fucking stressed out and makes more kind of, like, aggressive decisions...
You gave him the fucking Cisco arc. I love it.
Yes, yeah. I'm realizing that I just made him Cisco. Where he's just like, fuck this, fuck you. We're doing it my way, or we can all die.
Exactly. And I'm sure his relationships wither here and there along the way. Which,
yeah, you make decisions that people don't like. Like,
I love that. I love that shit.
One of the inciting, like, a piece of lore that is persistent throughout the series is the Krogan Genophage. So, basically, the Krogans were this race that everyone was worried about because the Krogans are, like, a proud warrior race. And they are just so, like, genetically designed to fuck up everything that moves. And... Basically, to stop their population from growing and overrunning the universe, a couple of the other races, particularly the Salarians, come up with a genophage. Like, they sterilize the entire, or a large number of the Krogan race. So for like 1,000 years. It's like a miracle if any Krogan or Krogan children are born.
That's fucking crazy.
And so in 3, in 2, there's a character who is looking for a cure for the genophage. You can take their research into 3, and that helps with them creating an actual cure. And then when you're on your way to cure it, so that you can, one, fix this horrible fucking thing that happened to these people, and two, you can get the Krogans on board in the war effort against the Reapers.
Which, not to cut you off, but that's literally another, like, Deep Space Nine Babylon 5 homage, because, you know, like, you have that overarching threat.
Yeah.
And, like, the main character's trying to get an alien race in on it to help them fight it.
Right. Which, like, the thing about Mass Effect 3 is you're trying to get everyone on the same page.
Yes.
So that we can save the galaxy.
Yes. Get the hell out of our galaxy.
Right.
Essentially.
And,
fucking love it.
And so the, so the Salarian, on the, that sits on the Galactic Council is like calls you and is like, hey, what if you didn't cure the genophage?
I was gonna ask about that. I'm like, is there a higher up in the fucking government who's gonna say you probably shouldn't do that? Could you maybe not?
Maybe don't cure the genophage. And would you go, hey, fuck off. Go to hell. Like, the option they give you is you can let them think that you cured it and just not cure it. Or we just won't help you. Or I won't help you. I think it is specifically. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, I don't give a shit if you help me.
Exactly.
Because the leader of the Krogan is one of your crew members from the first game. And all this character has talked about for like 3 years in the game, in 3 years in lore, is I need, the whole time you've known him, he's just like, I need to find a cure for my people. Or we will go extinct.
Holy
it's
shit.
Like, why would I lie to him and say, hey, yo, so I need your help, but I'm not going to help cure your people.
Exactly. Like, what the fuck?
And so
I love that.
Like, for me, it was like a no-brainer decision. Yeah, I'm going to keep helping.
Exactly.
But it does have, like, a consequence, which makes it a little bit tougher to get all the resources you need to save the planet, to save the galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
Because the other thing is you have like this bar that you have to fill up of like, here's all your resources. And so a lot, the thing that really burned me on that game towards the tail end is I spent what had to be like 4 hours just scanning planets to get resources off them. So that I can get the bar more full.
It's like, oh, this. God, that sounds like a lot of shitty, busy work.
Stunk.
Sounds like a fucking grind. I don't like grinding. I'm not a fan. I know some people find it fulfilling, but that doesn't sound
This wasn't a fun grind, though. You know, that's
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You don't feel, I'm sure you didn't feel accomplished after that.
Right, I was just like, fuck, finally, let's just do this now.
Let's get this over with.
But, you know, I beat those. The other game that I beat was Dragon Quest XI, finally. Eagle-eyed viewers, or sharp-eared listeners, I guess, will remember all the way back in, like, fucking January when me and Pachente did that episode. I had just started playing it. I got to the final boss of that game back in April, and then I just kept hitting a wall, and I was just like, I'll come back to this in a while. So then I came back to it this past month and grinded for a couple hours.
Mm-hmm.
And then just went in and beat him. Easy peasy. And that game is really incredible. Like, it's really one of the best RPGs I think I've ever played.
That's fantastic. That's the thing. I haven't touched many games myself lately. Mm-hmm. Which is a bummer because there's a lot of really good games out there, and I honestly think there's something I should be playing. I still haven't beaten Resident Evil 8 yet.
Yeah, so I haven't fucking touched that at all. I never beat 7. I should probably go
back and
do you never beat Seven?
Like, I know a bit about Seven, but there's a ton of gaps in my memory. I should just
just
beat it.
I didn't beat Seven until before Eight came out, so like that's understandable.
The other thing I've been doing to tab over to the weekly X-Men report.
Yes.
I have been reading the Hellfire Gala, which was the summer event for the X-Men. I really like the way they're doing these things with the X-Men comics because their stuff is so insulated where it's like, do you want to read the X-Men stuff? Okay, read Dawn of X, read all this up until Ten of Swords, read Ten of Swords, and read Reign of X, read the Hellfire Gala, and then just keep going. And you don't have to read a bunch of fucking Avengers tie-ins. You don't have to read fucking King in Black or whatever fucking bullshit.
Thank God.
You don't have to read... You don't. You just read the X-Men books. Does it have an X on it? Read it.
That's fucking awesome.
And it's a really good event to kind of update the status quo a little bit more. So basically... Emma Frost, back when she was part of the Hellfire Club, the original version of the Hellfire Club.
Yes.
They would throw these lavish parties, these lavish galas. Emma says, let's throw a different kind. So they throw the 2021 Hellfire Gala.
And, oh, shit.
A couple things to note. They make a point to invite a bunch of human dignitaries. You know, heads of state, Captain America is there. Like, they invite just people of note.
That's funny.
Including, for some fucking reason, Run the Jewels.
What?
Yeah.
Wait, what?
Yes!
No. What?
Yeah, you heard me.
That's fucking amazing.
Fucking Killer Mike and LP are in the back. They're not even in the background. They speak. Like, they talk, like, crazy. To each other, but, like,
That's see. Fucking crazy.
Let me find it. I'm pulling it up right now, the panel. There it is.
Yeah, I need the panel.
Yeah, because, so, Doom and Captain America are talking, and then in between them, just fucking RTJ.
Oh, my God.
I didn't even notice the guy doing the fucking pistol and fist next to them. That's great.
Oh my God. Then we're about to see some elder abuse. Shut the fuck up.
God damn it, Jamie.
Oh my God.
Yep.
That's fucking wonderful.
So they spend a lot of time showing you, like telling you something big is going to happen during this event. But not showing what it is for a while. And so just last week, because they're on Marvel Unlimited, they're updating it weekly, which is how it came out before. But I just want it all now. Fuck. So the big thing, they kept saying, you know, after the fireworks were that they were going to show that they have terraformed Mars.
Oh. Excuse me?
You heard me.
That fuck. What the fuck's going on?
Yeah. So basically, the other half of the Living Island Krakoa, known as Arako, no longer wants to. Now that they've pulled it out of Otherworld, they want the two islands to rejoin, and Arako does not want to do that.
I see.
Because it's alive, it has its own will. And humans have started to notice, hey, your island has seemingly doubled in size. What the fuck are you guys doing over there?
Right?
And they're like, hey, we need to prevent humans from coming here and fucking us all up. So let's fix that. They send the planet, or they send the island to Mars, and just terraform Mars and declare that Mars is now the is now the center of the solar system as far as intergalactic trade is concerned. As far as, basically, if you are an alien, if you are from another galaxy, if you're from another whatever, and you have business with this system, if you have a business with Earth, you don't go talk to anybody on Earth. You go talk to Storm on Mars.
Holy shit.
Yeah, Storm is basically the queen of Mars now. And it rules.
So it's like, it's almost like a port of call in a way?
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's fucking great.
And then they revealed the new X-Men team, which is cool because it's they basically put it to a vote in universe. And so it's Cyclops and Jean,
mm-hmm.
Rogue, Polaris, Sunfire, and Sync, who is a character who spent the last 20 years dead.
Just back now.
Yeah. Death doesn't matter anymore.
Nope. Nobody is ever really gone.
Yeah, but like they put literally on the page, we can just bring everybody back.
Which I love. I love that.
Yeah. And then a bunch of people end up fucking murdered.
During the gala?
Yes.
What the fuck? That's awesome.
When
the Jewels is okay though, right?
Yeah, they're fine. Emma Frost's brother Christian ends up getting thrown off his boat and drowned. Wolverine's other daughter, Gabby, ends up getting killed and she's just dead in a bush. Just a bunch of shit keeps happening. And, like, all these people are dead, and they're like, what are we gonna do?
The show must go on. I'm sure they shut down the gala, right, at some point.
Well, they don't find out till like, the next day.
Oh, shit. The show does go on.
Yeah, the show keeps going. Because the other person who ends up mysteriously dead, and I think I told you about this, is the Scarlet Witch.
Yes.
Yeah. Who is mysteriously murdered by someone who they think is Magneto, but I'm pretty sure it was Mystique.
Yeah, I was gonna say I don't think it'd be Magneto.
But reading that reminded me, fuck, I need to get caught up on New Mutants. I know the movie came out last year.
I never watched that. I'll say,
how familiar are you with the New Mutants?
Outside of the stuff about the movie, I don't know jack all.
Okay.
About them.
All right. So, kind of quick primer for you and for, the listeners. If the listeners have never heard of the New Mutants or are unclear, the New Mutants are they're basically the second class at Xavier's. The first class is, Cyclops, Jean, Iceman, Angel, and the Beast. The second X-Men team aren't students. They're all adults. Charles doesn't have to fucking teach them anything.
Yeah.
But the New Mutants are, they basically were supposed to be, they're supposed to take over for the X-Men, essentially. You kind of get the idea that, like, these guys are going to one day be the X-Men. That didn't work out for all of them.
Originally
it's Cannonball, Sunspot, Wolfsbane, Karma, Danny Moonstar. I think it's those characters. Now the current New Mutants title is all of those characters plus basically every young, like, X-Men who's, like, in their early 20s now. Like, characters who were introduced as teenagers who are now young adults. So now it's them, plus, like, Chamber and Mondo from Generation X, and Warpath, who is the younger brother of Thunderbird, and who's part of that second X-Men team. and they're just teaching like the current, like the youth, the children, like, hey, here's how you use your powers. Here's how you kind of operate through the world now. Welcome to being a mutant. It's the coolest thing that could possibly happen to you. Don't let anybody tell you that it's not. And so, they're doing their thing. The Cannonball, at some point in the last 10 years, moved to space. He got married and moved to space, as one does.
Okay.
And so Sunspot goes, hey, how about we go fucking get Sam and get him to come home? Because I miss him. He's my best friend, and I hate that I'm here and he's not. And so they go to Shi'ar space to go get Cannonball. And end up in jail.
Because
mistakes are made.
Yes.
There is just my favorite fourth wall break, I think, ever. Which I gotta find it. Basically, Sunspot is recapping it. Like, all the narration is done by Sunspot.
Yeah.
And, also, they're alternating between the team that are on Earth and the team that are in space. And,
The story keeps shifting back.
Right, keeps shifting back and forth because...
Oh, that's good, that's good.
Meanwhile, on Earth, Boom Boom and Armor are doing some shit. And so, like, issue 1 and 2 are about them going to space. Issue 3 and 4 are about Boom Boom and Armor and Magma doing shit. And then issue 5 is back in space, and then issue 6 is back on Earth.
That's and great. So, I'm sure it helps with the pacing and everything, too, because you don't want to be in one place for too long.
Right. And it lets you highlight different characters, plus you're rotating writers during this.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right.
You're doing different stuff with different writers, so it lets the different writers move to different books and not get fucking overwhelmed, which is cool.
Exactly.
So Sunspot is doing the narration, and he goes, he's talking, and Danny goes, hey, what are you doing? He's like, what? She's like, you've literally spoiled the story. He goes, what are you talking about? I'm recapping. And she's like, you skipped a whole issue, dude.
That's so good, funny.
And he's like, no, I didn't. Our last issue came out, which was 5. Then issue 6 came out. And now this is issue 7. She goes, Bobby, we weren't in the last issue. So what? He's like, there's another team on Earth doing other New Mutant things. Their book comes out in between ours. Funny. Yes, she's explaining the structure of the comic book to him. He goes,
Danny, do you not get the fucking release order?
He just goes, so I ruined it. Oh, yeah. But you did recap the hell out of it. Good job. I knew you had it in you. He goes, damn. Hey, wait a second. Are you telling me there's New Mutant stories I'm not in? What the fuck?
Yo, that's fucking great. That's so fucking good. Like, take that, Deadpool.
Yes. Like, don't get me started on Deadpool. Deadpool fucking sucks.
I was going to say, oh, my God. Are we going to do it? Are we going to do it? Are we going to bash Deadpool? Please. Please. Yeah! Let me get a drink.
Okay.
Let's fucking go. Please, please. I need this, Marcus.
I need you to give
this to me.
I fucking hate Deadpool. Deadpool. I
fucking hate Deadpool.
Deadpool fucking sucks. Deadpool, the most interesting thing that anyone ever does with Deadpool is like when Rick Remender writes him during Uncanny X-Force, and Deadpool is super like anxious about the fact that that other people see him as a liability.
Yes.
That, like, Phantom X and Wolverine and, like, they all see him as just a fucking liability. They're like, Wade's gonna get in the way, he's gonna fuck it all up, because that's what he always does, and he fucking sucks. Why is he here?
And I like that. There's introspection there. Most of the time, it's just chimichanga shit and like, tacos and I'm so random.
Well, and that's also it's like it depends on the writer because like I think Jerry Duggan writes him well. I think Gail Simone writes him well. I don't really care much for, like, Jerry Duggan, Gail Simone, Fabian Asieza. Those are, like, the writers who I think get that character and make him interesting. But the rest of the time, it's just fucking, haha, I'm breaking the fourth wall. I'm stealing She-Hulk's bit.
Awful.
Because, like,
absolutely awful.
Deadpool, like, the whole breaking the fourth wall thing, the first character to, like, do that as a gimmick in comic books is She-Hulk. But it's associated with Deadpool. To the point where that's his whole fucking movie is him doing that.
It's so fucking brutal.
It's ugh, ugh, just it's fuck awful. Off. Like,
I didn't mean to completely sidetrack us, but also, like, I actually recently watched Deadpool 2. It's fucking, it's okay. But
I hate that the Deadpool movies are the first film appearances of Cable.
Unfortunate, right?
A character who is super interesting.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, I honestly wanted to see more of Josh Brolin's Cable than I hope to see. Like,
he's like one of the only castings I hope they keep, and they probably won't.
They probably won't, no. He's Thanos. But,
he's Thanos. And like that's my thing is like, are they going to let him just be Cable?
They could.
And you know what? The good thing about Deadpool is he can just explain it away. Like, hey, isn't it weird you kind of sound like this other guy? And Cable can just go, what the fuck are you talking about, dude?
Shut the fuck up, Wade, and just move on.
Yeah.
Just move on.
God, Kevin Nash should have played Cable.
Kevin Nash would have been fucking great as Cable. Fresh off John Wick.
I came back in time as a rib.
It was a rib.
Oh my God, fuck. Like, it's Kevin Nash playing Cable, but he's very clearly just doing Kevin Nash.
It's just Kevin Nash. It's like Batman, or George Clooney as Batman.
But yeah, we're just playing George Clooney.
But good. But back to the New Mutants. We were talking about Danny, right?
That's Bobby is Sunspot. Bobby. Danny is Danny Moonstar, aka Mirage.
Okay.
Who's
so, breaking like, the fourth wall again?
They both are.
They both are. Okay.
Yes.
All right. Fantastic.
Because she is explaining to him the order in which the book comes out. But it's just nice to see these characters kind of back together after. Basically 20 years of them not being, like, they all kind of went their own separate ways at some point in the early to mid 2000s, and they've all, like, some of them will be together sometimes, but never all of them at once. Karma is a cool character to have around because, again, like I said before, you know how there's, when you put, like, what would be just a pretty real person that you would just know? In a book, people would view it as, like, political. Karma is one of those characters. She is a gay, disabled Vietnamese woman.
And they'd be like, oh,
you're just making this political.
This forced diversity. It's ridiculous.
You're trying to pander to the woke left. She does, like, totally, like, verbally whoop a dude's ass during the Hellfire Gala, and it rules. She's like, this guy is, like, just being a fucking dickhead, and he's basically trying to tell Warpath, I am going to fuck your lady friends here. And Karma's like, one, I don't like dudes. Two, you are a fucking embarrassment. You are not as important as you think you are. Fuck off. You should be glad that you aren't important, because if you were some manner of diplomat, this would be incredibly embarrassing for you and your country.
Oh my fucking God, that's cutting deep.
Yeah, and the dude just leaves.
He said, I bet.
Yeah. It's just really good. Really good fucking comic books. Some of my favorite art.
Yeah.
Because it's drawn by Rod Rice, who is kind of, like, lately my biggest influence with my art.
Because
he does a lot of, like, he does a lot of stuff that you don't see as, like, normal comic book fare. Because, like, when you look at, like, especially modern comics, there is a certain look. And every artist has their little touches here and there. You can tell a different artist style from these things. But they're all kind of inked in the same way. They're all kind of colored and shaded in similar ways. Rise, I don't know how to... It's R-E-I-S.
Mr. Rice, please forgive us if you're listening to this.
His art is, it's like kind of painted, but also kind of sketched. And it's like, holy shit, this is exactly what I wanted my art to look like, because I struggle so much with like the inking, with the lines. It's like, are these lines too thick? Are these lines too dark? You know, and so with this, it's like, with his style, which is exactly kind of how I pictured wanting mine, which is like, it just stands out in how different it is. And I just really adore it.
It really pops. Now, my question would be, the panel that you sent me here, is that part of his work?
No, that is... I don't remember who's on art for this. I want to say that's Pepe Larraz. I'll send you...
Yeah, because I really want to see, because I'll probably see his influences in yours. Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, this is great. Yeah, everything really pops here.
Right, it looks really distinct, which is kind of
exactly the silhouette of the characters specifically, like. Mm-hmm. It's awesome.
Yeah, and then he does like really expressive stuff for different characters, different stuff like that. But there's just really good comics. That's kind of been my bag lately. I don't know why I said my so many times there.
That's okay.
Before we get out of here, because we're already running over an hour.
Really?
Yeah. Yep.
That's pretty good.
You want to talk kind of briefly about the WWE draft?
Yes, I wanted to talk really quickly about something I've also been doing. But
yeah.
Yes, we can also get into the draft.
Let's talk about your thing first.
So I've been recently. I keep hitting the fucking microphone. I am so sorry. I think this is gonna be a nightmare. Recently been re-listening to Doctor Who audio dramas again, because, you know, like I drive out to work and stuff like that.
Yeah,
starting to drive, it's fucking sick. I have a car, guys. It's happening. Things are happening, even though I failed my road test. We're gonna get into that. But I've been re-listening to a lot of them, and also it's Halloween season, so I've been listening to a lot of the scarier ones. But, like, it's ridiculous how good they are and what they've done for some of the doctors who didn't get a fair shake. And I'm gonna be bringing this up in terms of like recent stuff with the new doctor and how she's been written and how awful it is. But you know, like the sixth doctor, he was very much maligned on television. Nobody liked him, even though the writers were trying to do something very interesting with him. They were trying to make him look or come across not like your ordinary doctor. Good on him, but it was like, you know, trying to choke out your companion the first episode you're there.
Yeah, like, not a great start.
Nah, not at all. But they did him a lot better in these Big Finish audio dramas. I'm currently listening to the ones with Evelyn Smythe, which is like, she's like this old professor who intends on retiring at some point. You know, she's very elderly, so it's a great combo to have the sixth doctor, who's still it's after him adventuring with Perry, so he's a little bit more relaxed, but he also still has a little bit of arrogance about him. So it's nice to have Evelyn just be there to fucking smack him down.
Right.
But I'm also hoping that we get something along the same vein for the 13th Doctor, because, you know, obviously this is known now. Jodie Whittaker is leaving, and so is the showrunner. they're leaving Doctor Who. They're out of there. And Russell T. Davies, the guy who started the revival back in 05, is picking the reins back up.
I did see that.
Yes. He's going to be running the show again starting 2023, because this upcoming year, it's just going to be the last season for Jodie and then like three specials and then she's gone. We're supposed to find out who the next Doctor is going to be.
Isn't the next one supposed to be like the last one?
The
one thing I know about Doctor Who is there's only a certain amount of regenerations.
Yes. And when it came to the 11th Doctor, they were going to do that, because I think it was only 12 regenerations for a Doctor. But because of, and I hate to run us up on time here.
No, we're good.
But it's the shit I have to say about what they've done to the Doctor is ridiculous. So they gave... When 11 died, before he died, he got 12 more regenerations.
Oh, okay. So they can just keep the shit going for another, like, 60 years.
Yeah, exactly. So they kept they're like, all right, cool. But they added to that, you know, the 13th Doctor, as we find out in season 12, not only does she have all of these regenerations, there is a Doctor who shows up in that season who we have never fucking seen before.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The fuck? So in the middle of season 12, I think it's called Fugitive of the Jadoon. You get to see the Jadoon from I think season 3, which is, I fucking love them. They're rhino cops. They're anthropomorphic rhino cops, and they show up and they're like, "Okay, we're looking for someone. If you fuck with us, you get vaporized. That's it. Period. Bottom line." Like, they're awful, yeah. But they're such good villains. So they show up, and the 13th Doctor's there, and they, for some reason, they just, you know, she's like, oh, okay, there's Junior here. And for a lot of this episode, we're following the perspective of, God, what's her name? Ruth. This lovely, lovely older black woman named Ruth. She is amazing. She's a tourist, and she's like, here, I'm gonna take you guys on, you know, little adventures and tell you about the history of these things and stuff like that. And she's just a part of this town. She lives with her lovely husband, and you know, we are to believe that her husband is the fugitive due to the framing of the episode.
Yeah.
So the Jadoon show up. They're looking for this fugitive. They see the guy and they're like, okay, that's not him. That's not our fugitive. When they get to the guy, they kill him anyway.
What the fuck?
So, yeah. So 13th Doctor meets Ruth and they're trying to find out what's going on. The Jadoon catch up with them and Ruth fucking kicks all of their asses and rips off one of the horns on the Jadoon, which is supposed to be like an act of dishonor or something. Klingon kind of vibe. We get to a lighthouse with Ruth and the 13th Doctor, and because I forget the name of it, but it's where if a Time Lord, there's this thing where Time Lords can hide their actual personality somewhere and just pretend they're human so they can hide from like threats and stuff like that. The 10th Doctor did that. A few of the Master did that at one point. She breaks the glass in the lighthouse. The memories come flooding back, and she is the Doctor. Ruth is a Doctor. She is an incarnation that we have no idea where in the timeline she fits, because
she could be the next one. She could be like 10 down from now.
Exactly. And here's the thing. She's like, I don't know who you are. I don't know who you are either. They're like, I don't know, like, I've never been you, and I've never been you. What the fuck's going on? And it couldn't be before her, because, because William Hartnell is supposed to be the first Doctor. He's like an old white guy. But Gallifrey gets fucking destroyed at the beginning of season 12, and she's talking about Gallifrey like it's still there. So...
Split timeline.
Exactly. We have no idea. And this is the fucking problem Chibnall gave us. So we get to the last, very last episode of season 12. Turns out the Master, which was revealed in the beginning of the season, said he's like, I destroyed Gallifrey because of the fact that the Time Lords fucking lied to us. We are right. not the race that we thought we were. We are absolutely terrible people. You have to find out the truth, and I don't want to tell you. You'll find out. And when you find out, you're going to be just as upset as I am, and you're going to understand where I came from, Doctor. So we find out the truth that the Doctor is actually from another universe. And that she is the reason why Time Lords can regenerate. Because a long time ago, someone experimented on her, on Gallifrey, and managed to isolate the gene to regenerate and gave it to everyone on Gallifrey to make them Time Lords. So she has actually been regenerating for millions of years. There are millions and millions of iterations of the Doctor who we never saw.
Oh, so the whole fucking, oh, you only have 12. That was just bullshit.
That's literally just bullshit. And it is one of the worst fucking things I think they could do. Because, like, one of my favorite things about the classic series is the fact that the Doctor is just some dude who's just fucking going around the universe and trying to have, you know, just have a good time. You know, mm-hmm. he's constantly going. This makes him the center of everything. This makes them the center of everything. And I feel like it's so, so stupid. And I don't know if they'll retcon it. I don't know if Russell T. Davies is going to create a nice, interesting spin on it where it's like, okay, the Master is lying. It was actually him who was the Timeless Child, because I think that would be a lot better.
This is I was talking about the, like, as a concept with one of my friends, which is that the idea that, like, oh no, that thing was just a lie. It was just bullshit.
Yeah.
Which is the easiest way you can explain anything away in any media is just go like, oh no, that was a lie.
Yeah, exactly.
We made it up. Total fabrication.
Yeah. It was a lie. It didn't happen. It's not true. It's fiction.
God bless you, Jonathan Frakes.
Oh God. We love Jonathan Frakes here on this pod right here. If you ever have time, John, please come on. But to circle around back, the 13th Doctor was given some really awful stories. It sucks because Jodie Whittaker is a fantastic actor. She did everything she could to make those stories good, and she got like maybe one of them that was like solid. Damn. So I'm hoping that Big Finish really give her an opportunity after this to be like, oh, hey, you want to come in the studio, record some stuff, give you some good fucking stories? Yeah, they'll do that. Totally do that. But yeah, I've been re-listening to those. They're a lot of fun, and they're I think they're on sale at the moment. So if you guys are ever interested and you like Doctor Who, you want actually decent Doctor Who content, you can't go wrong. You can't go wrong. So let's talk about this draft.
Let's talk about the WWE draft. The first night.
What the fuck's going on over there?
What the fuck is happening over here? Sorry, I just read something that was just totally fucking...
Oh, no, it's okay.
I stopped. My brain just went, what the fuck?
Why don't you share with the class?
Just someone... I don't even want to read it out. It was just like, okay, fucking... Yeah. What the fuck, man?
That's a valid. So, Twitter tends to have that vibe.
Yeah. So, in the first, go to hell. I'll fix it next time, CBS. So, the first night of the draft.
First night, okay.
Yeah, because they split it into two nights. So, first night is on SmackDown, second night is on Raw. So, Raw's picks are Big E, Bianca Belair, Randy Orton and Matt Riddle, Edge, Rhea Ripley and Nikki Ash, or ASH rather, formerly Nikki Cross, Keith Bearcat Lee, which I cannot stress enough that his name should be Bearcat Keith Lee.
I don't know what they were doing. Yeah, Bearcat at the front of his name just
rolls, makes more sense. Off the top of the battery. Yeah,
absolutely.
Rey and Dominic Mysterio, and final pick is Austin Theory. Who the less said about Austin Theory, the better.
What is he even doing with the company still? I thought he got fired or something.
Nope, he was just off TV for a little while. I think what it was Dexter Lumis whooped his ass and no one saw him for a while.
The fucking rules.
And everyone just thought he got fired.
Shout out to Dexter.
SmackDown picked. Also, did you see you saw the thing,
yes.
Right?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
Quick side note. On NXT this week, they did the honeymoon of Indian Dexter. And Johnny Gargano wanted to make sure that they were using protection. And so he goes into Dexter's bag and just pulls out a genuinely comical number of condoms.
It was
like he pulls out like 30 condoms.
Like 30 condoms, yeah. It's like the entire box.
And then at the end of the segment, Dexter gives Johnny a thumbs up and pulls more condoms out of his robe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And let me just say, I wasn't going to watch NXT 2.0. You know, I mean, I don't really watch a lot of modern. I've been watching a little bit of AEW here and there. I got to watch, you know.
Because does it feel good to be elite? I say, not watched Rampage tonight.
It feels amazing. I fucking love AEW right now. Everything that I had a problem with at the start of AEW has more or less been settled.
Yeah.
I do think that there's certain talent that need to be pushed up a little bit more. I think Darby needs to, like, get fucking... like,
thrown into the sun.
Put
on a t-shirt.
Yeah, just get him the fuck out of here. But everyone else is great. But when it comes to NXT, I wasn't going to look into it. But, like, Dexter is, like, making me want to watch it.
the reasons I am, like, curious about NXT every week, I'm watching for Dexter. I'm watching for Bron Breakker.
Bron Breakker! Oh, fuck yeah.
Because he's just, he's Scott's nephew. That's crazy.
Oh, totally. Absolutely. 100%.
Who the fuck else am I watching that show? Oh, Carmelo Hayes and Trick Williams.
Yes. I've seen some of them. They're fucking good.
Yeah. Just two niggas.
Exactly. What's better?
Just a couple of niggas.
He
told some. Oh, and an MSK, because somebody, I want to say it was Nash Carter of MSK, told somebody, he said, put your meat beaters up. What?
Oh, absolutely.
But Raw's draft picks are, or SmackDown's picks are, first pick Roman Reigns, which makes perfect sense. You take your two champions first. That's the thing that makes sense to do.
They switched him, right? Because he's now not on Raw. He's on SmackDown.
No, Roman's been on SmackDown the whole time.
Oh, okay.
Roman went to SmackDown last year or 2 years ago.
So they're still in the same spot.
Well, Big E is the one who moved because he was technically a Raw guy, but then he won the WWE title, so he was kind of showing up on both shows. Charlotte is the interesting one because Charlotte was the number one, the first woman drafted to SmackDown. Charlotte is currently the Raw Women's Champion.
Nice.
So I don't. I just hope they don't do the thing they did last year with the New Day and the Street Profits.
What'd they do with those two?
Okay, so last year, the New Day, then the SmackDown Tag Team Champions, were drafted to Raw. The Street Profits, then the Raw Tag Team Champions, were drafted to SmackDown. So what they did was they just had them both... they just switched belts.
Oh, that's awful.
Because it's like, hey, does it make sense for the Raw champs to be on SmackDown and vice versa? So New Day, you are now the Raw Tag Team Champions. Street Profits, you are now the SmackDown Tag Team Champions. That's which count as silly. An extra reign for both teams.
Yeah, I was going to say, wouldn't that count as an extra reign? Because that makes no sense.
Yep. So I don't know if you know this, but Charlotte is a 14-time women's champion. 15 if you count her NXT.
Are you kidding me?
I am dead serious.
I haven't watched in like years. It's been like 5 fucking years. Oh my god. I know people don't like a lot of Charlotte. They don't like seeing her a lot. But I didn't know that she had fucking 14 title reigns. Last I checked, it was like 3 or 4 when I was watching.
Let's see. So when you look at the history of the WWE Raw Women's Championship, which I am looking at this on fucking ESPN, which is bizarre.
What the fuck, really?
Yeah. So the according to ESPN, the Divas title legacy becomes the Raw Women's titles legacy.
Okay.
So Charlotte's first. No, I don't want to just look at the Raw titles runs, actually. Charlotte Flair is recognized as a 12-time WWE champion, or 12-time women's champion, because they don't consider the NXT title to be a world title. So technically, she's a 12-time champion, not 14. So Charlotte has been... Let's see. Jesus. Christ, there's nothing left for her to do.
Literally.
So Charlotte Flair, 2-time NXT women's champion, 1-time Divas champion, 6-time Raw Women's Champion, 5-time SmackDown Women's Champion, Women's Tag Team Champion. Do you want to guess who she won the tag titles with?
Becky?
No.
Sasha?
Nope.
Ooh, who the fuck?
Asuka!
Wait, what?
Yeah, Charlotte and Asuka won the belts last year.
That was my third guess.
She won the... I forgot she won the tournament to win the title, the NXT Women's title, after Paige vacated it. She won the Royal Rumble in 2020, and she won Match of the Year against Becky in 2018. Yeah, there is nothing...
There's nothing for her to do. Like how?
There's nothing.
What else? That's the problem with, like, doing that, like, strapping a rocket on someone. You have to, like... I don't know a great deal about wrestling booking, but I do know that if you want things to make sense over a person's career and make things fresh, you have to like space these things out.
Yes. Like, and these how many times do you think Shawn Michaels was world champion?
Had to have been like, what, 5, 6 times? Was it 5 or 6? Oh wow!
Shawn Michaels was only a 4-time world champion. He won the WWE title 3 times. He won the world heavyweight title once. He won the world heavyweight title when he came back in 2002. He won the Elimination Chamber. Yes, lost it. I want to say at Armageddon that year, and then never won it again. He wrestled for 8 years after that and was never world champion again.
And that's fantastic because like. They'd space it out over the course of however many years. He got the world title win, but like, and he would have world title matches after. Like I know,
right? He'd be in matches, but he'd never win the belt. Exactly. Like he was the guy. If you had a young champion you were trying to get over, you had him work with Shawn.
Exactly,
because he worked with Benoit, he worked with Orton, he worked with Cena, he worked. I want to say he had like a brief thing with Edge. But I might be wrong about that. Yeah, I was
going to say, he must have had something
with Actually, you know, I think all of his interactions with Edge were over the tag belts. Like, Shawn Michaels was more a... Shawn Michaels came back, and then the only championships he won after, like, the start of 2003 was he won the tag belts a couple times.
Yeah, yeah. I know a lot of them were with Triple H, right?
Mm-hmm. He also won it with Cena, and he also won it with... Oh no! It was just Triple H and Cena.
Yeah, the one with Cena didn't last long. I remember that.
Yeah. So, do you want to know what? So, just for comparison's sake, Charlotte is a 13-time women's champion. Or 12-time. 12-time women's champion.
Every time you say it.
It's fucking nuts, right?
Time is an illusion.
Yeah, well, that's 12 times in 6 years.
Oh, fucking God, dude.
That's a twice-a-year average, Charlotte wins the belt.
And Orton?
Randy Orton is a 14-time champion.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Randy Orton is a 10-time WWE champion, a 4-time World Heavyweight champion, former Intercontinental champion, United States champion, World Tag Team champion, Raw Tag Team champion, SmackDown Tag Team champion, Money in the Bank winner in 2013, 2-time Royal Rumble winner, 17th Triple Crown champion, 10th Grand Slam champion.
My man's held a whole lot of belts. A lot of belts.
Charlotte is 2 behind Randy Orton.
That's fucking crazy.
Randy Orton, they put the belt on Randy for the first time in 2004.
Yeah, when he beat Benoit, right?
When he beat Benoit. And then he didn't win it again until 2007.
And that was when, was that when he was doing the Legend Killer stuff too?
No, it was right before he started doing the voices thing.
Oh yeah. Hey.
Yeah, he was still using that. He was still using.
Yeah.
It was around the time he started using the punt.
Yes. He won. Yes.
Because it was what it was Cena was champ for over a fucking year.
Yeah, that was a long time.
Cena was champ for like 380 days or some shit. And then Orton. Cena tore his pec, I think.
And yeah, he tore his pec.
I think they hand Orton the belt because Orton was the number one contender. Cena got hurt. And so they're like, Randy, you're champion now.
Randy.
And then Randy and Cena feuded over the belt for what feels like forever.
Yeah.
They feuded over the belt all through 2008 up until 2010, maybe?
Yeah, that sounds about right. That sounds about right. Because then around 2010...
Because like they dipped in and out of other feuds, but their primary feuds were with each other up until they got separated in the draft, I think. I think Orton went to SmackDown and turned face, and then Cena was still on Raw.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. You had the Nexus, too, and that
was... Yeah, the Nexus shit, and... Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, that was... That in the course of, let's say, 17 years, Randy Orton, 14-time champion. Charlotte Flair in 5 years.
And that, like,
12 times.
For Orton, that makes sense, right? Like,
yeah.
That's a long
He was the top guy for years.
Absolutely. Holy fuck, Charlotte.
And Charlotte, what I think it was, too, is they wanted to have her pass her dad.
Yes.
And now I don't know if they will reference it in the way that they were going to before.
Oh my God, that's right.
Because that story about Rick resurfaced, and a lot and more I people haven't... are aware of it now.
Mm-hmm. Dark Side of the Ring, right? That's the reason mm-hmm. why. Yeah, yeah.
And so,
I haven't watched any of that, but I've heard about, like, that story.
Yeah.
Not a good fucking look.
I'll not a good look for the Nature Boy.
Nope.
So, I wonder... I wonder if they'll even have her do it. So, someone suggested the theory that Bianca will just beat Charlotte for the... Like, Charlotte will just be Raw champion on SmackDown, and Becky will be SmackDown champion on Raw. And Sasha will beat Becky for the belt.
Mm-hmm.
And then Becky or Bianca will beat Charlotte, and that'll be that. Because otherwise,
there's a lot
you're just running these numbers up to do it.
Exactly, and it's just like, it makes no sense.
In kayfabe, somebody being champion a bunch of times doesn't really mean much.
No, not really. Not really. Not like it used to, anyway.
Right, because, like, I think Stone Cold is, like, a 6-time champion or some shit. The Rock.
That was a lot back in the day. Like, that was like, holy shit. Rock is what, like eight times?
Yeah, and I think one of those is since he came back. Let me see.
Yeah. It was, I think it was his title reign. He went off the CM Punk. Yeah. Oh, fuck.
Wow, it's weird typing The Rock into Wikipedia, and it goes like, people nicknamed The Rock, and the first result is Ole Anderson.
That's fucking funny.
It's Ole Anderson, a darts player named Peter Hudson, then The Rock, then Don Morocco, Saint Peter, the Apostle. And oh, some hockey players, swimmers. Okay, so Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Oh my god, it's really weird seeing that there's a section on The Rock's Wikipedia page that says Impact Wrestling.
Yo, what the fuck? Oh wait, yeah. Did he was there once, right? He wasn't there once, but he did a video or something.
Yeah, to induct Ken Shamrock into their Hall of Fame.
Yes. Oh god, that's ridiculous.
The Rock has the. I'm just looking at his Wikipedia page. Sorry, this podcast is just running long, y'all. Just talking about bullshit.
No, that's totally. And I hope you guys are okay. I mean, this is par for the course for us.
Yeah,
we tend to do that. This is.
Do you know that The Rock holds the record for the most Raw shows main evented in a year? And the most SmackDown shows main evented in a year, and is tied with Austin for the most pay-per-view shows main evented in 1 year.
No.
The Rock main evented 38 Raws in 2000, 36 SmackDowns that year, and 12 pay-per-views.
You can't say that the guy was not fucking grinding.
It is interesting that the year that Austin did it was 2001.
Oh, bruh, that is really interesting. Because you'd think that'd be, like, beforehand.
But mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. That is pretty crazy. So this fucking...
Okay, so draft. The Rock is a 10-time champion because...
Oh, 10!
Well, he's an 8-time WWE champion, and he's a 2-time WCW champion.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about the WCW title.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's weird that he won it twice.
Yeah, he won while...
Also, I forgot that The Rock owns the fucking XFL.
Oh, my God, he does. Or did.
No, he does.
He does. Oh, my God.
Yep. They're going to try and be back by 2023. And we're going to try and be back in about 2 weeks.
Well, let's hope so. We will.
Yeah.
We will be.
Yeah, we've been keeping pretty consistent. Thank you for hanging out with us for the last hour and 40. I love that I said, hey, we're running up on an hour, and then we talked for another 40 fucking minutes. I'll be interested to see I'm always interested around draft time. I wish they didn't do it so close to Survivor Series.
Mm-hmm.
Because Survivor Series is always like, oh, brand supremacy. It's weird if a lot of these people worked on the other show a month ago.
Literally. And when is Survivor Series? That's in November, right?
Right around Thanksgiving.
Oh, jeez.
Yep. But until next time, whenever that will be, note, we will shoot to record the next episode in 2 weeks. But, you know us. I'm Marcus. You can follow me on Twitter at ArcherArios, ArcherArios. The X is a C. Do not make me explain it. you can follow Monet on Twitter and just Twitter.
Oh, just Twitter. Just Twitter.
Yeah, just Twitter.
Deep Space Niners.
Niners. That's nine ERS.
Yes.
I should probably just use the fucking podcast Twitter sometime. And yet,
let's do that.
Yeah.
Sorry, we'll start posting things on that.
Yeah, they should probably just do that. But anyway, in any event, follow that at this pod here. Until next time, y'all, take it easy. I'm gonna try to not fuck up the recording this time.
Yeah.
All right.
Go to bed.
Go to bed.